Pranams. Bow to the light within you. Reading from Swami Ram Dass, I am that. There is a charm, a magic power in thy name. It catches hold of people and turns them into gods. Thy name roots out all desires and bestows immortal peace and joy. The darkness of the soul is dispelled by thy name, flooding it with divine illumination. What is it that thy name cannot do? All good things flow from it. When thy name enters the heart of the miser, he becomes a benefactor of the world. It transforms the cruel man into an image of compassion. Thy name removes hate from the heart, infusing love. It awakens the soul and drives off torpor and ignorance. Where there is narrowness of outlook, thy name grants universal vision. When thy name, sung by thy devotees, rings in my ears, I am not only thrilled, but my entire being is filled with ecstasy. Oh, what power is in thy name! Saints sing its glories tirelessly, and I, thy child, attune my tiny voice with theirs in extolling thy name. Thy name is the sole sustainer of my life. It nourishes my heart and mind. It sends thrills through every vein and tissue of my physical being. What more can I say? It has molded me into thy likeness, into thy form and spirit. All victory and glory be to thy name. Thy name destroys misery and yields unending joy. I become the votary of thy name and was blessed beyond measure. Thy name is thyself, thy very form, life and being. I am saturated with thy name and have become thyself, the resplendent truth, the goal of seekers. I am that. How blessed we are to have Papa so close and so near and dear. What great wisdom comes from him. I'd like to read from my posting this morning, "Stillness is real silence." Rebecca has come to stay for some of her last days in her month-long silence and seclusion. Her time in doing this sadhana reminds me of my spending 1 year in silence and seclusion at Cloud Mountain. This came about one day when I was speaking to a devotee, and out of my mouth came, "I feel directed to spend 1 year in silence." This pronouncement came as the biggest surprise to myself, particularly since previous to this I had not spent even 1 day in meditational silence. But now that God had said it, how do I go about doing it? I thought of renting a cabin for the year, and others pointed out different silent retreat centers to contact, and one thing led to another, which is another way of saying God was leading me by the hand, step by step. And I discovered David Branscombe and the Cloud Mountain Retreat Center in Southwest Washington. I talked with David, who had started out his spiritual life feeling deeply connected to Master. He had built Cloud Mountain with his own hands, literally carrying the lumber and all the materials on his back from the road he had made to the building sites. Although it was mostly Vipassana Buddhists who rented his retreat center at the time, he was thrilled to have a connection with Master, staying at his unique and newly built cabin for a long-term retreatant. He offered the cabin and food for 1 year at no fee, but I felt I should pay him something. I think we settled on $250 a month. He was lovingly supportive all through the year, and I cannot thank him enough for his open-hearted seva. I knew going in, starting September of the year 2000, it would take some time to settle into silence, particularly since I had been non-stop traveling to centers, giving talks, and meeting with aspirants. The first 3 weeks or so in silence, I could feel my whole being gradually becoming quieter. One of the first things I noted was the absence of movement. being at the cabin and on the grounds of the 5-acre retreat center only, whereas before there were simple and familiar activities like going to the store, being out and about, and now nothing. And then there was the absence of planning, no schedules to keep, no arrangements needing tending. My task was silence, be here, be now. I was simply observing, noticing these changes as time unfolded. And then there was the blessed relief I experienced. There was nowhere to go, nothing to plan, no outward demands. Oh, the luxury just to be with God. There are many internal journeys during the year, great challenges, and tremendous experiences given by God and gurus, experiences that amazed and deeply moved me. However, beyond all these wonderful revelations, the real purpose for the year of silence and seclusion came clear to me sometime later in my time there, and then continued on afterward. I was to be established in the presence of God. 24 years prior, Mother had ignited the Kundalini force at the base of my spine that shot like a rocket to the Ajna. This was the real beginning of my inward sadhana. For there are things we do in our outer sadhana, such as developing the habit of meditation, practicing Kriya Yoga, chanting and deepening prayer, the methods we adopt in order to purify the body and the mind. Inner sadhana occurs with God and Guru's blessings, when we experience the upward current of the vastly powerful spiritual force, which in India is called the Kundalini. I can never relate all the experiences I have had with this marvelous Kundalini force. It was through these experiences the inner change occurred. It involved not only spirit, but mind and body as well. If I had been a better devotee, I am sure I should have shortened the time for transformation. However, through the years, transformation did occur, and it prepared me for merging into the higher consciousness. The goals of mystics and saints the world over. God had led me into silence and seclusion, and as a result of what he did, there is solidification in my oneness with the inner divine presence. A strong point of this connecting union was in the heart center. I was deeply aware of this steadfast, unchanging presence that was unshakable and unvarying. This place of oneness was such that it did not deviate even when I re-entered the world after the year of seclusion. This knowing oneness with the infinite was a product of God and Guru's grace, and with the invaluable help of my second spiritual mother, dearest Swami Satchidananda. When God commanded this year in silence and solitude, I had no idea what was in store. I only knew it was his command. Every devotee has his or her own journey. And as we know, paths to God vary in outward form. However, for most, there will come a time of stepping away from the demands of the world to be absorbed into inner silence. Not speaking is not the real silence. It is amazing how loud and nonstop the mind can be. Only by stilling the body and mind do you beget true stillness. Then, inner stillness is born in the heart, a place of deep connection with the infinite divine that is the firm foundation for oneness with God. To become still is the goal of Kriya Yoga and its after effect. And the chanting of God's name is meant to result in that same stillness. To be established in inner stillness brings about the extraordinary state of oneness. That is why the great mystic sage King David sang, "Be still and know that I am God. Be still and know God as your eternal self of your being, of the source of unending bliss and the answer to all of your heart's desires." That quote of King David's comes from the 45th Psalm. And it reads, God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. Therefore, will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea. Through the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. There is a river, the streams whereof shall make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. The heathen raged, the kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice, the earth melted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge, Selah. Meaning, pause, think on that. Come, behold the works of the Lord. What desolations he hath made in the earth. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in fire. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. This is really a tremendous writing because it has in it so much of what we go through when we choose to put God first. And then God takes us up. And David starts out with an affirmation, with an inner assurance, with his own realization. God is our refuge and strength. A very present help in trouble. Now, as we read about David's life, it was not perfect. And he did some really dastardly things at times. And yet he never seemed to deviate ultimately from wanting to please God and to know God and to know God's will. And so he is the aspirant who never gives up, who has faith, but also creates trouble for himself. So we should not think of him as being at above it all at all. Rather, he was in the midst of the journey, just even as we are. And he continues, therefore, we will not fear. Therefore, we will not fear. And this is one of the great attributes of coming to know God, is that fear is left behind, because fear is rooted in anticipation of something terrible happening and that we will feel alone, isolated, powerless. Now, from a human standpoint, we can say this kind of situations are presented in the world all the time, that there are times when things go very wrong, that we are out of control, or rather, things that are around us, situations that are occurring, are outside of our control. But to not fear is to have that perfect connection with God. Faith is an interesting word because the way that Jesus uses faith, it is a real experience. It's not just a mental attitude. But it is a real connection with God. So that if you had the faith of but a mustard seed, you should say unto this mountain, be thou removed, and it should be moved. That's quite a statement. Quite a statement. So it's not just a simple, I think that that is true. I believe that that is true. That is of the mind. But when we have faith, that is something that is known deeply in the soul. And when we have that kind of faith, then we will not have fear. And he says, we will not have fear though the earth be removed and though the mountains be carried in the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled, though the mountains shake with the swelling thereof. Now all the time we're thinking, these are things that happen in the world. But there are times that these inner shakings, these mountains being removed, those things are happening inside of you. They are the shaking up that happens when you go through these spiritual experiences. You are not left the same as you were before. You are transformed. You are transmuted cell by cell throughout your entire body and being. There is nothing left untouched, because this transformation takes you from the human to the divine. And by divinizing every part and particle of your being, you are then a proper instrument that can be a conduit through which the expression of God can come most perfectly and most fully. So there are times when the body shakes, when you have earthquakes inside of you as this energy erupts and moves up through you. Sometimes the shaking has outer meaning too. It corresponds. When I was at Cloud Mountain, I had written to Larry and I said, these last days, I just feel like my whole body is being shaken apart. And at the end of those days, there was the Nisqually earthquake that took down some buildings in Seattle and rattled around my cabin quite a bit. All of a sudden, the cabin started shaking while I was sitting and meditating. And I opened my eyes and I thought, oh, this is an earthquake. Well, this is kind of fun. See where we go. Hopefully the cabin stays in place. And it did. And so afterwards, I didn't have those shakings inside anymore. So sometimes it's a portent of things to come. But nevertheless, it's still about the inner changes that go on inside of us. And this shaking is the rearranging of your bodily cells. Just even as when you move to the left and to the right, or you're made to dance in particular ways, or made to sing or voice different sounds, these are all rearranging bodily cells, bringing them into attunement with highest consciousness. So then David goes on to say, there is a river, the streams whereof make glad the city of God, the holy place of the tabernacles of the Most High. This river is the life force that flows into you. And it comes in through the back of your head and into your brain. And from your brain, it goes down through the spine and out through the afferent and efferent nerves. It does so as so many streams. And the tabernacle is at the crown of the head. And it shall make glad the city of God. It will give you bliss. It will give you joy. It will give you light. It will give you revelations of the truth of God. And so it makes glad the city of God, this river that flows in. God is in the midst of her. She shall not be moved. God shall help her, and that right early. So this is God coming and the reassurance that she, the city of God, the tabernacle of the Most High, will not be moved, will not be interfered with. It is being built inside of you. The heathen raged. The kingdoms were moved. He uttered his voice. The earth melted. Now, oftentimes we are told the heathen are those who are not believers, such as the Jews or such as the Christians or such as the Muslims. It's anybody who's outside of your group. And this is a narrow, distorted vision of what heathen is. Heathen is that those aspects inside of you that are not attuned to the highest divine consciousness. In fact, they rebel against it. They put themselves outside of the will and the life of God. And so the heathen raged. So this comes up inside of you, where you feel this tremendous dissonance with God. There's a part of you who doesn't want to go according to His will and rebels against Him. Now, these are serious kinds of tests when they come. So oftentimes when we read the stories of saints, we think, well, why did they give in to that? That's no problem. Until we're in it. And it's our problem. Then we see that it truly is a problem. And it's whatever is that soft spot. It's whatever is that Achilles heel inside of us. That's what it will go to, because that's what has to be mended. That's what has to be changed and transformed. So it all has to happen. And the kingdoms were moved. He uttered His voice. The earth melted. The earth melted means that in this uplifted experience, the earth or the body consciousness slips away. And you go into the divine. You feel the bliss, the power, the presence of God completely and fully. And so the earth melts away. That's a wonderful thing. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. So that's an affirmation. God is fully with you. Not distant. Not far from you. It is the same God that informed Jacob. It is the same God, for that matter, who informed Jesus or Krishna or Rama. It's the same God. And it is your refuge. It is your place to go to. Always in your mind, in good times and in bad. Come, behold the works of the Lord, what desolations He has made in the earth. Now, on the outside, that doesn't seem like a very good thing, does it? It's the desolations of the earth. And yet, it has to be desolated. It has to be put behind us, overcome, risen above. And so there is an aspect of desolation. I remember when I had gone through the dark night of the soul for 2 years. And I turned around and I looked when I was given a vision by God of what I had just been through. And I saw that the earth was broken with earthquakes. It was all burned sooty black, and the air was sooty black itself. And I let out an inner yell. Because for 2 years I had been holding all of this inside of me, just trying to get through it. But now I could look at it and I could see it. And it was terrible. It was a desolation. Now through this dark night of the soul, there is a complete emptying out of yourself. There is a desolation. You are, as Mother said, not what you were. You are not what you are yet to become. You are like John on the Isle of Patmos. That is describing this state. You are not the human being that you once were. That is gone. But you are not yet resurrected. You are not yet lifted up into divine consciousness. And so this is a definite state that you go through. And in that, the earth is desolated. He maketh wars to cease unto the end of the earth. He breaketh the bow and cutteth the spear in sunder. He burneth the chariot in fire. And so here we talk about coming into peace, real peace. Now, real peace can only come from people who band together and live in peace, experience peace. I have met people who talk about wanting peace on the earth, but they're so angry about the things that are occurring. They themselves are not at peace. Therefore, how can they be harbingers of peace? They are polarized against this person and that person. And there's so much energy around that, so much anger that there's not peace. And yet they themselves are not experiencing peace. So first, we must have that peace. And peace is not just a simple lack of violence or difficulties or troubles. It is a positive experience. It is palpable. It is touchable. It can be so thick within you or in a room or in this world, that it is as if it is a living substance, an ocean that is around you. That is how great and powerful peace can be. So we should not just think of it as the absence of difficulties or war, but it is establishing ourselves in that kind of peace that comes from the stillness of your inner being. So this is a tremendous thing when it comes. And then the chariot burneth in the fire. The chariot is the body. And the fire is this tremendous kundalini force that courses up through your spine. And it is burning out all the dross with the heat. And it is a purifying fire. It is purifying and it is difficult, and you should keep yourself cool when this fire is raging. The yogis used to cover themselves in ashes, and ashes are a cooling agent. They also anointed themselves with oil. That is what the Christ means, is the anointed one. And as one who has oil put onto his head in order to cool it while he's going through these experiences. Now, it became a formality that kings were anointed with oil as a rite of ritual. And originally, kings were realized beings. It was like Krishna, who was a realized being, an avatar, an incarnation of God, and he was a king on earth. Rama was as well. And so the highest rulers were such because that was their duty. That is what they had come to do, and they were in full and complete union with God. Now, when any aspirant, when any devotee goes through these experiences and feels this fire within, you have the risk of burning out cells in your brain and in your body if the fire is raging too much. I remember once there was a devotee, and she was calling me on the phone. She was driving from here to there, and so as she called, I said, "You're on fire," because I was feeling it in myself. And she said, "Yes, it's wonderful." I said, "Well, cool it down, because I'm getting all the after effect of it. So don't just let it rage like that, because I'm paying the price for that. Put some ice on, put some oil on." We don't generally walk around with ashes on our head and our face, but we can put on some peppermint oil. It's very cooling. And if you put on a little bit of water on top of the peppermint oil, it cools you down. It feels like ice. And so you have to keep your system cooled so it doesn't overheat and cause damage to your nervous system. That doesn't help. So he burneth the chariot in fire. Be still and know that I am God. So you're going through these tremendous experiences, everything that's been described above. And then it comes into this stillness. Be still and know that I am God. I will be exalted among the heathen. I will be exalted in the earth. And again, we read heathen as those internal forces that are resistant to going God. I will be exalted. I will be lifted up in divine consciousness, even though the heathen or these opposing forces is still are in with me, and they are broken, those forces are, by that being lifted up. It is the grace of God and Gurus that we are lifted up, even though we have these oppositional forces. And so we feel that upliftment, we feel that bliss, we feel that light. And the heathen are broken, the opposing forces are broken in this way. I will be exalted in the earth. Now that's very interesting, isn't it? That it says in the earth. Because the earth, in this case, is your body. And it is in your body that God is exalted. The Lord of hosts is with us. The God of Jacob is our refuge. Selah. Think on that. Be still. Now the path is universal. even though there are individual variations that we go through. But the path of the spine and the brain is universal to all mankind. It is the pathway in which this Christ seat starts at the base of the spine. Well, it begins in the brain, doesn't it? And then it makes its journey down to the base of the spine. And then it starts to go up the circuit. It goes into Galilee. And there the Christ, that Christ seed, begins to gather his disciples or each one of the chakras and the life force and the consciousness that is entailed in each one of these chakras. The very base chakra is that around survival. And it is the most basic impulse that you have. The next one up is close to it. And it is survival of the species, and it is the sexual force inside of you. And it is the desire for pleasure. And as you ascend up, and you become a bit more sophisticated, then you enter in the place of free will. And in free will, you choose. You're not just subject to basic kinds of instincts, like survival instinct or procreation instinct. Now you have the free will, and in a sense, this is a great evolutionary step. It is a great evolutionary step, and yet, at the same time, it offers the greatest problems, because now we do have free will. We're not just subject to the instincts that nature has given to us. And it is an interesting thing what man does with that gift of free will. Because you would think that if we all work together and in harmony, that we could make a wonderful paradise on this earth. And yet we find that there is jealousy, there is crudity, there are those who seek to have power over another. And as a result of that, man can do more dastardly things than anything that would ever happen in the animal kingdom. Animals can be cruel, it's true. But mankind can be much more cruel and much more clever about its cruelty. So free will is a wonderful, tremendous gift. But it brings with it a great challenge as well. And that is that will is to be used rightly. When it is, then we seek higher aspirations. We go beyond the three lower chakras, you might say. Those that are basic to most all human beings. And we rise up to the fourth chakra. Now, in the beginning, that can be on a human basis. And that is the place of love. And we can love another person. And suddenly, if we're deeply in love with another person, we might sacrifice ourselves for another person. It's the first time we get out of ourselves. And that we actually expand out in order to become more, in a sense. It's still on a human level. But it's a tremendously great time for breaking out. We can do that for a lover. We can do it for children. We can do it for parents. We can do it for a beloved friend. That heart opens. But the other side of it is that we can also have dark jealousies. And there can be all the negative emotions that go with love. And if we give in to those, we can do very great damage, not only to ourselves, but to others. So it's interesting that as you go higher up, there are more benefits, but there are also more risks. Then you go to the fifth chakra. And the fifth chakra is the speech. And what you say and the power of your speech. And many people explore that in a human level. And through that, they learn the power of speech, and some people use it to their own advantages. And other people don't learn, they lie. Now that has a certain power to its We can get our way at times. I think a wonderful saying I once read is that the worst penalty that a constant liar pays is not that people will stop trusting him, because he will always find new people to trust him if he is convincing and good at it. But rather, he'll never trust anyone else, because he will assume that they are lying to him. He projects himself onto them, and he sees the world as full of liars. And that produces an isolation, and that is a terrible price to pay. Truthfully, I would rather die a pauper speaking the truth than live a prosperous life as a liar. I have seen both. Now, fortunately, we are not always having to make those extreme choices, but it's true. I would rather have that life as someone who tells the truth. I remember years ago, I made a solemn vow to God that I'd always speak the truth. And sometimes it's been a challenge. Now, it doesn't mean that I have to, or that anybody has to, tell everything to everybody. Because as Jesus says, if you dangle your pearl before a swine, the swine may turn around and just rend you. Not exactly sure what rending is, but I'm pretty sure I don't want it. And people will hurt you. They'll use the truth against you. They'll twist it and distort it. And so you don't necessarily take out all your tenderest truths and present it before everyone. But you never speak an untruth. And so this may be, you may think, is shading it a bit, but it's not. It's not. You definitely know when to withhold from saying something. It just doesn't feel right. But it's not the same as speaking an untruth. So we learn to do that, and we learn the power of speech, and that when we say something and we are a truth teller, it carries with it a certain power that otherwise would be absent. Now, the fourth and the fifth chakra also have divine dimensions as well as human. And in the fourth chakra is the opening of the heart center, the divine love. And this is not something that is a human sentimental kind of journey. It is something that awakens inside of you. It's a profound experience. And you feel this love pouring through you. And it is God's love. And there is no end to it. And it fills your whole being. In fact, you can feel that you are swimming in an ocean of love. There is no more tremendous experience in life. And then that love just keeps pouring itself through you. Now, that doesn't happen overnight for most people. It's a gradual opening. It's the contest between the human and the divine. The human wants to hold back. It wants to judge other people. It wants to say, this person is deserving of my love, and this other person is not. Jesus had a tough sell to his crowd when he said, love your enemy. This was not part of society at the time. You hated your enemy as an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. And if somebody socked you once, you socked them back twice. Now, this does not make you a doormat. And if you really look at Jesus' life, you see there are times, and he is a terrifically strong actor on the stage, when he takes the whips to the money changers and overturns the tables. He's not being milquetoast. He's not just being a sop. Rather, he's taking a powerful stand. So it doesn't mean that you just roll over, but that inwardly you have this profound feeling of love And even when you have enemies, when you see people who don't do things that are correct, excuse me, you can definitely see that that individual is not acting the way that they should. And in addition to that, you can see what the consequences of that are. Now, it may not happen even in this lifetime. It may be down the road. But eventually that individual will pay the price for what they are doing. And you can have compassion for them. Now, you may still stand up to them, especially if they are perpetrating something against an innocent, against somebody who cannot defend themselves. But nevertheless, you can look with that long vision and saying, you poor soul, you think you're getting ahead by doing what you're doing, but you are not. And the price that you have to pay will be a tremendous one. And I feel for you, because I too have deviated from the path. I too have not done correctly. And I've had to pay for that. And so I can empathize with what you're going to have to go through. And from that standpoint, we can have compassion for anyone, even a Hitler. You think of Hitler and all that he perpetrated in this world, and he's going to have to face and experience everything that he projected out. And that to balance the scales, he's going to have to produce an equal amount of good. And so we can only project into the future and think what a tremendous, tremendous soul he will be when he turns himself toward the light and toward God. He will suffer greatly, no doubt about that. But he will help this world to evolve. Otherwise, it would not have balanced itself out. So you see, when we look at somebody just from a snapshot, we can make judgments of them. But when we see the whole film, the whole from the beginning to the end of what an individual soul goes through, it gives us compassion and understanding. And this is a great perspective to have. And so the heart can have that, and that feeds into the fifth chakra, which is around speech, but it is also around discernment of truth, of dharma, of right action. And it goes above just things of the heart. And it is pure perception of truth. What is the right thing to do here? What should I be about? And in the beginning, we use our reason. We go according to the Ten Commandments, or the Yamas and the Niyamas. Those rules, those guidelines that help shape our behavior. And it's a useful time to go through because it helps to purify us as we face those things that are difficult to decide, that are not always in our favor. Master talked about when the English first came to India, and some of the judges were absolutely amazed at when individuals would come into court of law and they wouldn't shade the truth. They wouldn't speak an untruth, even though it was not in their favor in the court of law. And yet when we do that, we establish ourselves in peace and feel an inner joy even when we have to go through difficulties because of what God has arranged, simply because we have spoken the truth. And so you not only speak the truth, but you discern it. And if you speak untruth, you will never be able to tune in to this higher knowing of dharma or right action. You always have to go according to the reasoning mind. But when you always speak the truth and you are dedicated towards it, then this certain knowledge of what is the right thing comes to you. And you also speak it. Then you rise up into the sixth center, and this is the Christ center. Now there's still an aspect of humanness here, but it is mostly divine. But when Jesus says, I and my Father, there is a sense of separation. It hasn't completely merged yet, even though he is saying we are one. Still there's a sense, and you experience this. You feel this Christ light, this Christ consciousness, this Christ intelligence flowing through you, and yet you identify yourself as an individual, not fully one with God. And that's what has to be crucified. That's what has to be gone beyond in the final analysis. And what it is, you rise up into the Sahasrara, and there at the crown of the head, there is no distinction. There is no difference. There is only one. There is only God. Now all creation can be held in that oneness. But in truth and in reality, it is all God. It is all God. Now for the human mind and human reasoning to fully be able to encompass this is not possible. Because the human mind thinks in duality. And this goes beyond duality. It goes beyond I and thou. You and me. Those distinctions lose their meaning. And now you go into that pure oneness with God. And so that becomes your refuge in a sense. Now it's not a refuge as in trying to escape someplace. It becomes your refuge of the soul from the dualism that you have experienced up until now. You merge into that oneness with God. You feel it completely and totally. And so, sila, think on that. Pause. Think on that. Absorb it. Make it part of you. Recognize the journey, the great journey that you're on. Realize that you are on the greatest adventure known to anyone. And then take yourself in hand. Make the effort. Put yourself in God's way. Now he may take you through all of these experiences that have been described above, and some of them are tough, very tough. And yet he is with you. Because it starts out like that. God is our refuge and strength, a very present help in trouble. So let us continue on with this journey. Let us find the joy within ourselves. Let us realize God until we can read through these verses and know the truth of them, and that truth that has set us free. Pranams, I bow to the great light within you, that it should fully awaken. And you should know it so profoundly, so deeply, that it changes you from the toes of your feet to the top of your head. You're completely transformed in that oneness of God. Om Shri Ram, Jai Ram, Jai Ram. Victory to God, victory to the light.